I want to turn now to Proverbs 6, and just as a transition, I'm glad we spent the previous half hour talking about the curse, the plague of political correctness, and the plague of religion. How the religion of socialist secular humanism and its moral code, political correctness, has rendered people incapable of actually being discerning, discriminating, exercising good judgment, and put them in the same class as those who are religious, particularly Christians, Hindus, and Muslims, which collectively would be the big three religions. Christianity is twice the size of Islam, at about 2.4 billion people, about 1.4 billion, 1.3 billion Muslims, and a little over a billion socialist secular humanists. That collectively, that group of people, which is, now if you add now Hinduism to it, you're upwards of 75% of the world's population, have all been rendered incapable of even processing what God had to say. They can't know God. He isn't knowable to them. You know, it's particularly sad for the people who are religious, because they claim that by being religious, they're in a relationship with God, they're worshiping God, they are being saved by God, and you just think for a moment. I mean, drive by a church and first of all, recognize that the church is named after Church, the goddess of the Germanic religions, Teutonic religions, where Helios was the Lord, and Church was a goddess, the sun goddess. God doesn't have a church. Doesn't have anything close to a church. And it says worship services and gives you the time. Can you imagine a deity so revolting, so insecure, that he would create a being to worship him?
Let me tell him something about worship. We did this one time on a show, and the three biggest words that were
most common words
translated in English is worship is to sink in a hole or a pit, lie prostrate with your face down in the ground, and pain. That was Shekhar and, let's say, Sagad and Etzab. I mean, so God never said that.
No.
Yahweh never said that.
No.
So,
no, a God that wants to be worshipped isn't worth knowing. I mean, listen. I have my issues. I am a flawed individual. And even with my flaws, the last thing I would want is for somebody to worship me. I would think it would be absolutely revolting to be worshipped. Now, if I'm a flawed individual and I don't want it, can you imagine a God that would want it?
No, not really. Could possibly figure out what he would want it for.
I mean, that's kind of like if you, rather than just having the capability of painting slugs, that you could actually create a slug.
Okay.
A little slimy, burpy thing. In fact, I don't even think they have brains. Snails and slugs don't even have brains. So it's just it's this slimy, slurpy thing that just goos up everything, and that and it's, you know, on their belly, and you, Kirk, in creating the slug, have decided that you want all slugs to worship you. And any slug that won't worship you, you're going to throw into a fire.
Okay.
Step on them and throw them into a fire. And if they do worship you, you're gonna give them the opportunity to burp out, Kirk, you are the best. Kirk, you are the most wonderful. Kirk, I love you so much. These brainless, slimy little critters. How's that going to make you feel good?
Well, that just raises my status so greatly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, people wake up. You know, we were speaking of Islam being stupid, but you imagine the heart of Christianity is their God died for their sins. Mm-hmm. Say what?
And they killed him.
Yeah. Man, if man can kill God... Ain't much of a God.
Ain't very powerful.
God can't, man can't kill God. God can't die.
No.
A God worth knowing is immortal. So your own accounts, your own eyewitness accounts tell you that he didn't die. That God didn't die. And then the last statement was, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me? Put it together, folks. It's not hard. You know, you've got a religion that is comprised of Babylonian myths, and yet the highest-ranking person in that religion, oh, he'll celebrate Easter and Christmas. Think about Easter. I mean, it's even named after the pagan goddess, Ishtar. But you have to be absolutely out of your ever-loving mind to be a Christian. I mean, just think of the stupidity of believing that God inspired Paul to contradict and annul everything that he had said and done.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the stupidity of that. I mean, you have to be absolutely a moron, incapable of thinking rationally, to believe that there is a Christian New Testament with half its books being written by a man who contradicted and annulled everything God had to say.
Well, you'd have to be a moron if you understood that, and then you continue to be a Christian. I mean, you just, once you studied it, and you say, well, gosh, he contradicted him everywhere.
Well, all you got to do is read the first 10 pages of the book that you call it Matthew, but Matanyan means Yahweh's gift.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's translated out of Greek into English when the words were spoken in Hebrew, and it loses a lot in translation. But just read it in English. Read the instruction on the mount and see what Yahusha said about the Torah. See what he said about the wolf in sheep's clothing. See what he said about those who call him Lord and claim to have done miracles in his name, to cast out demons in his name, and built mighty edifices in his name. And he says, I don't know you. Get away from me.
Those of you
who are Torahless, get away from me. And he tells that the wolf in sheep's clothing would take you away from him.
Mm-hmm.
In the context of annulling the Torah. And he even says that the one who would annul the Torah will be called lowly and little in the kingdom of heaven. That's what Paulos means, lowly and little. You know, all you have to do is read Matanyah 5, 6, and 7, the instruction on the mount. That's all you got to do. And at that point, you know that Yahusha was not only Torah observant, he was literally walking out of the pages of the Torah. He was the living embodiment of the Torah. And so a religion that would negate the Torah and replace it with a New Testament, with a new and different covenant, is wholly inconsistent with his testimony.
Mm-hmm. You have to throw the whole thing out.
Right. And the moment you're Torah observant, if you follow Yahusha and you're Torah observant, you can't be a Christian anymore.
No. The easiest walk I ever made.
Yes. It's so obvious. And while there are things that you give up, you know, if you have loved ones that have died, you will never see them again.
Well,
but
you would have anyway.
But you're not giving up anything because you're never going to see them anyway. You know, you won't be able to go to church and rub shoulders with people that you wouldn't see any other way. Because God won't tolerate anyone in his family that is religious.
Yeah, you get better friends.
Get better friends. You save your money for something worthwhile. You know, why pay people to lie to you?
Yeah, exactly.
How much did Yahweh charge you for access to his testimony?
Not a darn dime.
Not a dime, yeah. Here's what he had to say. My son, choose to be spared and remain safe by closely examining, attentively focusing on, so as to be protected and preserved by complying with. That's Netzar. Netzar is a really great word, and I'm starting here on Proverbs 6:20. The reason I like Netzar so much is that it is equal parts observation and salvation.
Mm-hmm.
It is observation that leads to protection. If you observe what Yahweh has to say, and observe doesn't mean to do anything but open your eyes, read the words, and consider their meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Read and contemplate. That's what observing means. And it's equal parts observe And then restoration, protection, rescue, salvation.
Yes.
Because the natural consequence of being observant is to be saved. Now, the covenant doesn't even mention salvation. Doesn't need to. It's implied. It's a byproduct of the covenant.
Yep.
But if you read what God was offering in the covenant, and you pay attention to what he has to say, and you consider it, it's so reasonable, so rational, so beneficial, you will capitalize upon it. You'll act on it, and the result is that you will be saved.
You know, this is kind of profound. I just tell you, thought it came to me when I read it earlier today, that this is the opposite of what Christians pray to get close to God. God asks you to read what he has to say.
Right.
He's not that interested in what you have to say. It doesn't mean he don't love you. He just ain't that interested in what you want to say. Your answer is already written.
Yeah, he doesn't want you to ask him what's your will for my life. He doesn't want you to ask him to save you.
And you don't need anything because I'm going to take care of you. That's a given.
He's already provided the means to salvation. And if you don't want to read what it is, if you don't want to avail yourself of the plan that he provided, then go away.
But I mean, you know, the Billy Grahams of the world, they'll start you out with a prayer.
Right.
Going, you know,
you're
going
to talk to a God that you've never listened to.
You pray, you know, it's just like that ain't what it says here.
Yeah, you're going to talk to a God that you've never listened to, and you expect that God to listen to you, even though you're unwilling to. Even though you're not willing to listen to him.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow. Matt Sarris, three letters, and since this is right up your strong suit there, Kirk. The three letters are noon.
We have the noon.
And then the TS.
Sound, and the R.
So why don't you tell us, let's begin with the last letter. What is the Rosh?
Rosh is a face. It's a head. It's an observing, someone observing, concentrating with their faculties.
Right. So it shows eyes and ears and a mouth, the head.
Yes,
and the big part of the head is the enclosure where the brain is.
Right.
So it's an observant and observant and thinking person, a person who first and foremost, in fact, Rosh even means first and foremost.
Right.
Who is first and foremost observant and contemplative.
Right.
That's the Rosh. TS.
Facade. Yeah, that's a man lying down resting.
Yeah, but what is when you see the TS in any word, what does that word mean? Signpost.
Oh, signpost. Long
way. Yeah. For example, Zion isn't written with a Z. It's written with a TS.
Right.
The Hebrew word for righteous is really the Hebrew word for right and upright. Tzedakah.
Right.
Begins with a TS. Eretz, the promised land, in the midst of the Eretz. Is the TS. Signpost along the way. That's what the TS means. It's a signpost. So if you're observant and contemplative, you're going to see the signpost along the way. There's only one way to Yahweh.
Right.
That means is Pesach, Matzah, Bekudim, Shavua, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah, the seven Moed Mikra. And the signposts along the way is the Torah provides the signpost along the way. So it's the person who observes and contemplates, and therefore understands, the signposts along the way. Those are the first two letters. So that's actually the last two letters.
Just for a little bit of a side, I used to use tall, you know, when I'm thinking about the signposts and all, but they're both interchangeable. They're both the T sounds. So that's fine. And then the last one, of course, is, the first one was the none, the inheritance, the sperm, the life.
Yep. So an observant person that sees the signposts along the way,
and discouraged,
resting and relying on Yahweh, will be born into his family and inherit the covenant's promises. That's what Netzar means. Observe and be saved.
Yeah.
The letters explain the words. One of my favorite Hebrew words. So my son, choose to be spared and remain safe by closely observing, attentively focusing upon, so as to be protected and preserved by complying with. Now, this was written in the call stem, which denotes a genuine relationship, which should be approached literally, in the imperative mood, which conveys second-person volition. So, in the sentence, Yahweh is first person because he's speaking. Our Heavenly Father is speaking to us. He's first person. So it's my son. The my here is first person.
Mm-hmm.
The imperative mood is second person volition. When he says, my son, who is second person?
Well, that would be us, the son.
That's right, the son. So this is my son, choose of your own volition. That's the imperative mood.
Very, very important, yeah.
Right. Choose to be observant so as to be protected. Very important to look at the stems and what they mean in Hebrew. And this was written in the active voice. That means that this applies when the son responds in this way. He activates the terms and conditions of the covenant. So my son, choose to be spared, remain safe by closely observing and carefully focusing upon, so as to be protected by complying with the directions and terms of the binding contract, mitzvah. Mitzvah, you could write it, codicils of the covenant,
mm-hmm.
terms and conditions of the binding contract,
right.
Directions and instructions regarding the relationship agreement.
Mm-hmm.
That's what mitzvah means. Hey, guess what? In the middle of mitzvah, that begins, of course, with the ma, the second letter, same letter, of the tazdeh,
T-S. Yes, began.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This time it adds the wa and the hey to it.
What and hey?
Right. So in this case, mitzvah, you have a person standing up, reaching up, paying attention to God. Standing up, not bowing down. Reaching up, not down.
Right.
Focusing on who God is.
Mm-hmm.
Engaged walking. That's why halak, the Hebrew word to walk, begins with the hey.
Right.
The next letter going backwards is the wa.
Enlarging the family, the person itself.
Right. And also making the family more secure. Enlarging the family, making it more secure, increasing the individual's capacity. So the individual who is observant, standing up, reaching up to God, is made more secure. They are increased in every possible way. And then the next letter is the signpost. By the signpost along the way, the TS. And God's doing this for us. I mean, the person on the Tazdeh is laying down, resting. Pain. You know, it's an interesting kind of resting. It's not flat on their bed, but it's the person is reflecting on the signposts along the way. And the first letter is the Mem, which is the life-giving and
cleansing nature of water.
Mm-hmm.
That part, spirit.
Right.
Conjures up all of those meanings.
Right. So the directions and instructions associated with the terms and conditions of the covenant enable those who are observant to be cleansed, to benefit from the signposts along the way, to be made more secure and to be increased in every way.
Right.
That's what the letters convey. So pay attention to, be observant regarding the directions and terms of the binding contract of your father, Ab, and do not ever actually forego or reject the Torah,
right,
which is the teaching and guidance of your mother.
Mm-hmm.
So the mother here explains who the mother is in the statement that Yah etched in stone. That would be the second of the seven instructions that Yah etched on the second of the two tablets to highly value your father and mother. This, the father is the father who provided the directions and the conditions associated with the covenant, because he's the father of the covenant family. And the Torah is being associated with our spiritual mother, the set-apart spirit. That the Torah, right, she is the means for us to come to know Yahweh. And she reveals Yahweh and acts on behalf of Yahweh when we are Torah observant.
You know, I'm finding little things the more I translate and the more I study.
Mm-hmm.
Little things that I can't figure out. I know I've heard you say this several times, but most of the time you just dig it out. But sometimes I just almost give up. And there it is when you look again. So, I mean, it's got to be her guiding. Because, you know,
yes.
If I talk it all to him, I say, yeah, let me figure this out. I can't. I'm done. I've got 15 books here, and I can't find what I'm looking for. Sometimes it's right there where I already looked.
Yeah.
Which is embarrassing, but
Yeah. It requires an investment of a lot of time to see what God is saying. It really does. I mean, you really have to want to. You have to want it. Now, you do.
Yeah, you got to have the want to.
Yeah, got to have the want to. You got to be willing to invest the time. You've got to want to do it. And you've got to find it fun to do. And if you do, then it's always there.
Yeah.
And the more you look, the more you learn. Now, the interesting thing here says, do not actually forgo or reject. This is al-natza. Do not fail to act and never negate the statements, causing a disassociation from the relationship, forsaking or deserting, discontinuing or abandoning. You know, Paul said the Torah no longer was valid.
No.
He said the Torah could not save.
No, he asked us to abandon it.
Right. He said that the Torah was of the flesh, couldn't save, that it was a cruel taskmaster. Speaking of that Old Testament, he said that it was poneros, pornography.
Was that the cruel part when he took them all out of slavery in Egypt?
Yeah. He even said that it was the Torah that caused him to be a sexual pervert in Romans 7.
I think he did that all by himself.
Yeah, and in Romans 7 he says the Torah is dead.
Yeah.
And Yahweh says here the same thing that Yosha said. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, I'm convinced, by the way, that there's nothing Yosha said that wasn't already written in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. I don't think there's a single thing that he said that you couldn't find in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And he says, do not think that I came to annul the Torah and Prophets. And here, Yahweh says, do not annul, do not reject the Torah and Prophets.
Don't leave the path.
I've given you the means to know me. I have given you the means to engage in a relationship with me. I've given you the means to be adopted into my family. I've given you the key that opens the door to heaven. It's all the covenant. Five terms and conditions, five benefits. They're all presented only in one place, which is the Torah. Don't reject it. And what did Christianity do because of Paul?
They walked totally away.
Well, rejected it. Yeah. And if you're rejecting the Torah, who are you also rejecting?
Yahweh.
Well, your mother. Your mother says the Torah of your mother.
Ruach Kodesh, yeah.
Yeah. There is no relationship with this set apart spirit. So if you are infused with the spirit as a Christian, it's the spirit of demons, the same spirit that Paul admitted affected him. Now, the conditions of the covenant are really straightforward. Walk away from the political and religious babble of your country. And religion. Trust and rely on Yahweh instead. Walk to God and become perfect along the path he has provided. Closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant and circumcise your sons.
Right.
The benefits are eternal life, becoming perfect, being adopted by God into his family, being enlightened and thereby enriched, and becoming empowered by Yahweh. That's it. Nothing more to it than that. Now, you can't act upon that until you know who Yahweh is, which means you need to read the Torah. You can't understand that sufficiently to engage in this relationship without reading this in the Torah. Our quick summation of it is insufficient. It's accurate, but it's insufficient. It's a wholesale mind change that is required. And that mind change is, are you going to abandon, walk away from politics and patriotism and religion and political correctness and embrace the truth? Are you going to be observant, closely examining and carefully considering what God had to say?
You know, I found one of the reasons you don't want it to be quite so shallow with just this is what it is, do that, you know, or whatever, is that when old Satan comes around, or when people doubt, you know, when the doubts come or whatever, if you're not armed, if you're not sufficiently studied, if you haven't sufficiently studied enough to be real secure that he proves what he says, then it's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, in fact, the passage we just read is the first statement after God says, these are the abominations that I hate.
Yeah.
And he's speaking that the abominations that he hates only address two people in all of recorded history. Well, one person in recorded history who was not yet alive, in fact, would not be alive for 1,000 years after this was written, and one person who is alive today but has not made themselves manifest. it's written for Paul, and it's Paul is the only historical person who meets every one of the criterion of what God calls a hated abomination. But the person that it speaks of that is yet future, although this individual is probably very close to 30 years old today, is the Torahless one known to Christians as the Antichrist. It is identical. The Antichrist will be so like Paul that when he arrives, Christians are really going to think there's no chance this is the Antichrist because he's a Christian. Anyway, it's the same of both. And the whole thing here on paying attention to the Torah and to the covenant is you're not going to be fooled by the plague of death, by Pauline Christianity. If you know the terms and conditions of the covenant, you're not going to accept a new covenant and a new testament. Okay. You're not going to be fooled by it. And if you are observant of the Torah, you're not going to accept a Christian Pauline New Testament. The religion of Christianity is destroyed. This is the antidote, the only antidote. That's why God gave it right after the things. He says, these are the things I hate. These are the abominations, the seven abominations. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the antidote. Choose to unceasingly, this is written in the imperfect, which means on an ongoing basis. It was also written in the imperative, which means that it's subject to second person volition. So choose to unceasingly fasten them upon your heart, continuously electing of your own free will to place them as an adornment upon your neck. Now, the heart was not the seat of emotion. The heart is take something to heart means to know it so well that it becomes part of your character. It's part of your inner nature. It becomes essential to your attitude and your motivations. It was considered the seat of judgment. So choose to unceasingly fasten them to that part of your inner nature that defines who you are, provides your perspective, and that is the place that you go to evaluate evidence and render a good judgment, a sound decision regarding the evidence. That's where he wants this. That's why when Yahweh returns, the first thing he's going to do is he's going to write a perfect copy of his Torah inside of his children, the children of the covenant. He's going to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and Yahudah, and then immediately he's going to write a perfect copy of the Torah on our hearts. He says that in Yirmiyah 31, which means, by the way, there cannot be any Christianity. You couldn't have annulled the Torah if, in fact, that Yahweh's means to affirm the covenant is to write a perfect copy of the Torah inside of us. He's going to write it on our hearts because not the organ that pumps blood, but on our seat of judgment. So it provides our perspective. It enables us to exercise good judgment. So that's where he wants us to put it. Then he wants us also to have it be an adornment upon our neck. Now, God is opposed to jewelry. I mean, every time that you see him speak about jewelry, like he's in Proverbs 7, he says, you know, the women are walking around with these bangles. And he says, you know, instruct into a person wearing an angle, the tinkling of an ankle bracelet is an absolute waste of time. You know, you're just completely wasting your time. They're more interested in the sound made by the jingling of their ankle bracelet, and it's more like a fetter to them than reason or evidence. So God's not in favor of jewelry. So he's not asking you to go and have a necklace and put on the necklace a Torah passage. Our voice emanates in our throats, in our larynx. We breathe. Our nephesh breath goes down and up our throats. We're nourished by what we take down our throats. And so the purpose of this is to say, let it be what nourishes you. Let it be the words that you speak. Let it be the essence of your soul.